Good morning. You're listening to Oklahoma Voices on KGOU. I'm Brian Hardzinski. On September 30th, Oklahoma City Public Schools Superintendent Rob New and Associate Superintendent Aurora Laura described their hopes and the challenges for turning around academic performance in the state's largest district. November marks the beginning of what Superintendent New calls his Great Conversation, his administration's attempt at bringing together all the stakeholders into the discussion of how to improve the Oklahoma City education system. That was the central theme throughout this forum hosted by Oklahoma Watch.
We want to welcome you to our Oklahoma Watch Community Forum, focusing on new leadership, new plans for Oklahoma City Public Schools. I am David Fritzy, executive editor of Oklahoma Watch. I'm not sure if you've heard of us. Oklahoma Watch is a nonprofit investigative news organization. We produce stories and other content that we distribute around the state and post on our website, oklahomawatch.org. Our mission is to cover public policy issues in depth. That includes education, health care, poverty, all these very big and serious issues. Tonight, we will be discussing the challenges and the changes to come to Oklahoma City schools, and we want to welcome our guests, certainly the one who is present with us now, Rob New, Oklahoma City Public Schools Superintendent, and arriving shortly will be Aurora Laura, who is Associate Superintendent for Oklahoma City Schools. Before we jump into questions and the format, I'd like to thank our partners for the event. Camps 1910 Cafe, again, has donated this space for our community forum, and Oklahoma Public Media Exchange is providing audio expertise. So thank you both for supporting the event. The format, it's going to be very simple. It's question and answer. I'll spend about 15, 20 minutes asking questions of our guests, then we'll open it up to the audience. We have two people, Evie Holzer over here with her hand up, and Warren Veith, who have microphones, and you raise your hand, you'll be able to, they'll come to you and ask a question. We'd ask you to please keep your questions fairly brief, not to go on and express a long opinion. We have limited time. We want to keep this to an hour, a little over an hour. And it just get the more concise we are, the more questions we'll get in. Finally, as a matter of housekeeping, I must point out that the opinions expressed at tonight's event are not necessarily those of Oklahoma Watch, Oklahoma Public Media Exchange, or Camps 1910 Cafe. So, about the district, you have 46,000 students, 89 schools, 5,000 staff members. You're the largest district in the state, and that means many challenges. There are high poverty rates, there are diverse languages and students, and low academic performance in many schools. I hate to even bring up the issue of letter grades, but if you look at the letter grades, there are a lot of Fs, a lot of Ds, a lot of Cs. So that means you have a lot on your plate. So Superintendent New, where do you start? What do you think are the two most important changes you need to make coming in year, in your first year or two? What will you focus on?
Well, first of all, if I can just thank folks for coming out tonight. Really appreciate you being here and participating in the event. I hope that this exchange leaves us all a little more enriched and ready to take on the challenges and opportunities of serving our students. So the two things. The first one is to fix the A to F system so that we're actually really having a true measure of our student performance and success. It's a flawed system, and I think that we're putting too much emphasis on it. And I say that because I'm new here. I inherited the grades that we just got. And it's easy for me to sit back and say, as I look at the formula and how the A to F is defined, I have concerns. To that effect, though, in November, we're going to start what we're calling the great conversation, moving together as one, as a community. And what we need to do, David, is we need to bring in all stakeholders, all constituent groups, bring them to the table, give them voice, and have an in-depth 6-month-long conversation about our hopes, our dreams for our school and the children that we serve. And in that, we have to come up with our measures of how we are going to hold our schools and me accountable. I welcome accountability, And I think that it's a conversation that we must have. We have to de-emphasize the test as a key component of our metrics, but we also have to say, what are the things that we hold important to us? And so the two things that I see right now is, first of all, we have to change the culture in a school district. We don't have high enough expectations. And so within that, what we have to do is we have to create a culture of caring for our students. We have to know them by name, strength, need. We have to know their hopes and dreams and connect their learning to those. And change the culture and tell them that we expect more of them and support them in getting them there. The other thing that we have to do is along the lines of culture, but we have to increase the rigor. And we have to do that at all levels, and that'll be part of those metrics that we're going to come up with. And then the last piece of this is that we have to wrap the community around the kids. The schools cannot do this alone. We know this. And so this is a community effort, and we all have to have ownership in our students' success.
You've spent the first 100 days, that was your plan, to go out exploring, talking with people. You invited parents to send you emails. So I'm curious, what have you heard from, especially from parents or families? What are they saying? What are their concerns?
Well, it kind of goes back to what I was just talking about. The first thing is parents want us to know that we know who their children are. You know, it's really interesting. We're doing some work with Russ Qualia, and he is founder and CEO of the Qualia Institute out of Maine. And over the last 20 years, they've surveyed about 1 million students a year. And secondary students in America, 54% don't think that teachers care if they're absent. 52% don't know or don't think that teachers know their name. And yet those same kids, 95%, think their parents think that public education or education is important. That's a huge disconnect. So I think that that's the first thing that parents want to know. They want to know that we know their children. They want to know who they are and that we care about those individuals. The second thing that I've heard from parents is they want a voice. They want to feel that they've been heard. And then really, I'll add the third thing is that of the concerns, they tend to be mostly operational and making sure that the buildings and transportation and food services and all those things are suitable to meet their kids' needs.
You speak to wrapping the community around the district. Oklahoma City Public Schools are in areas where people often feel that the city neglects them. I mean, in some places you can't even, throughout the city, you can't even catch a bus after 7 o'clock. There's been a lot of investment in downtown Oklahoma City. Many parents, many residents say the community, the city needs to pay more attention. But how do you convince that city, that community to do so?
Well, you know, one of the things, when I first started looking into Oklahoma City during the search process, the first thing that jumps out at you is what's happened here with the MAPS projects. I mean, you know, three different tax initiatives that the voters have approved. And, of course, the second one was MAPS for Kids. So I think to a large extent this community has already spoken out and they're supportive of the students' education and educational needs. But I think the key is that I don't know that the community knows or thinks or feels that they're a part of the equation or wants to have ownership. You know, this is our legacy. I look around this room. There's a whole bunch of adults in this room. We all own a piece of this. It is our collective responsibility to ensure our students' success. So people ask me, how can we be a part of the process? Well, first of all, be a part of this great conversation that's going to start in November and continue on through May, maybe even into June. And bring your voice to the table. But at the same time, you have time, talent, or treasure. And so how can you contribute to your schools? I would love to see every one of our schools be adopted by a business, a nonprofit organization, and a church. We have to have our schools open 7 days a week, 12 hours a day, and we have to extend the services in our communities through the schools. They have to be part of the community. And so I think by doing that, we can create more of a feeling of community in our school system.
You know, I want to ask one thing about the A through F letter grade system that came up. You know, the schools give out letter grades, A through F, to students. Why can't the schools and the districts accept a very simple letter grade that is easy to understand so people know how their school is doing?
Well, the students get a letter grade, and it's based on a whole bunch of assessments and measurements, as well as teachers' professional judgment. The A to F grade is not based on a whole bunch of metrics and a whole bunch of different categories. That's the conversation this community has to have, and what I would love to do is to come out at this time next year with our own A to F and say, these are the things that we think are important to our students here in Oklahoma City. Let's take control of this process. Let us decide what it is that we think is most important, and then hold the schools accountable to that. Hold me accountable to that. I welcome the accountability, but not when it's based on 50% is on one assessment. That's ridiculous. And then 25% is on the growth. And the growth isn't necessarily growth. And so, in other words, when you look at the A to F formula, it's really biased against your urban districts. We've got to make a change. And we have the ability here in Oklahoma City to come together and agree to what those metrics are and to go to the legislature and say, this is what we think is important. This is how we're going to grade our schools.
Now, I would like to welcome our second guest, Aurora Laura. Welcome.
At this time, I'm going to excuse myself. Thank you all for coming.
So I had one question.
Sure.
You were in Seattle area, West Seattle Public Schools, correct?
The West Seattle region, yes.
And you were at Federal Way Public Schools. Did you meet when you were both there in that area? Do you get to know each other there then? Oh.
No, I've never seen this man before in my life.
I think you have another issue you had to work on.
What was interesting is we share a very dear friend, Susan Enfield, who was the interim superintendent in Seattle schools, who Aurora worked for in Seattle and in Portland. Mm-hmm. And then we actually met once at a national conference with Susan and had a conversation for about a half an hour. But then as this process unfolded, Susan made a call to me saying, hey, Aurora is really interested in coming and working with you in Oklahoma City. And so the rest is history.
Okay. And before I agreed to go work for him, I checked my references too and found out he's a good superintendent to work for. So that's why I'm here.
Ms. Laura, we're talking about a little bit of everything and anything, but we've touched on community. We've touched on the need for change, the main challenges in the district. And, of course, you're in charge of curriculum, a word that often gets confused with standards. But basically, it's about the way to impart the knowledge to students. And there's talk of big changes in that area. So we want to know what you plan to do and how you plan to get teachers to put into place what you want.
Great. Well, when I first got here, being in charge of the curriculum department, I wanted to see what we had in place already for teachers. And so I wanted to interview everyone in the current curriculum department and find out what supports teachers are currently being offered. And I asked to see a copy of the org chart for our curriculum department, and they told me at the time that they couldn't really give me one on paper, but they could tell it to me by counting on one hand the number of people that they had in a curriculum department. So they said they had a head of library services, a head of literacy, and a head of art. And so, coming from another district, I thought maybe they misunderstood the question. There's a lot more out there that we definitely need to be supporting in terms of giving teachers the right supports and help to be able to really make changes in student achievement, things like math and science and social studies. So those hadn't been in place for many years in this district, and so that's where we started. We started by identifying what are the key areas and departments that other districts similar size in our country have, and we went ahead and built an org chart for what are kind of the basics that every district would need. And we have gone ahead and staffed up in those departments. So we brought on someone in charge of math, someone in charge of science, someone in charge of social studies. We also are just about to hire someone for world language support and also advanced academics, which means gifted and talented, advanced placement, and AVID programs, because we know we need to do a better job of serving students who are performing above average and are ready for a greater challenge. So we started by building that department, and now what we're doing is building teams of teachers to work with our curriculum leads to rewrite our pacing guides, to help support teachers in terms of what they should be teaching and in kind of what order, help them make sense of our standards situation, and also to be giving us advice about what curriculum matters we can really help fix in this district. So we've heard a lot of feedback around some frustrations with grading systems, some frustrations with our assessment systems. So we've developed some task forces to get input from teachers and principals so we can make changes at the end of this year based on real feedback from people in our district.
Mr. New, when you came, I think when you had a meeting with the editorial board of the Oklahoman, and there were lots of teacher vacancies in place. And you made the statement that if a year from now, if we were looking at the same sort of situation, that they should just fire you. So how are you going to bring in more teachers before next year? What changes are you going to make to prevent that from happening?
If I can just make a slight amendment to what you said or what I said, I said they won't have to fire me. I'll quit first.
Oh, okay. So I stand corrected.
This is one of those issues that I talk about, raising the expectations. And for whatever reason, we've come to accept vacancies at the beginning of the year. And there is no more single important thing that we can do for our children than to put a great teacher in front of them every minute of every day. And when you have 150 vacancies, that's just unacceptable. However, understanding the problem, they talk about the 100-day plan, looking at critical issue analysis, this is a critical issue. But this is a decentralized district that has really left the hiring process up to all of our principals. And one of the things that we have to do here is we have to take off the bureaucratic responsibilities from our principals. And we have to give them the space and provide them with the support and the resources to become instructional leaders. They have to be able to go in and shoulder up with our teachers to ensure that our teachers are meeting the needs of our kids every minute of every day. And so to have 150 vacancies is absolutely unacceptable. So the first thing we're doing, we're in the process of doing, is we're going to reverse the hiring process to where central office is going to go on a 24/7, 364-day, we'll give them Christmas off, and a recruiting trail. And they've never had a recruiting budget, so we're implementing a recruiting budget. We've got to go out and recruit teachers to get them here. And then we also have to do, well, that's one of the three R's. We have to go out and recruit. And then what we also have to do is we have to relocate them. I'm telling you right now, coming from Michigan, Michigan State University is probably one of the best teacher preparation institutions in the country, and then those teachers can't find jobs in Michigan. So let's get into Michigan. Let's get into Wisconsin where the same problem is happening, and let's offer a relocation incentive package to get them here. And then through the work that Aurora's leading, we have to retain them. We have to offer world-class professional development. We've got to equip our teachers with the tools. We have to raise their pay. We know this. We have to be competitive with the states around us. But we also have to make sure that they are supported and have the skills. That's the number one reason why teachers leave the profession is when they don't feel supported. So we have to become a support service center out of central office to make sure that our principals, our instructional leaders, and our teachers are great teachers, and that we start the year with 100% fill rate.
But how are you going to be able to raise their pay if the state doesn't increase the funding significantly? How do you come up with the money?
Well, what we have to do right now is we are making this a legislative issue. And I've already seen that this is becoming a topic of conversation as they head into session. But what we have to do is we have to get some help from the private sector. We have to. And, you know, you look at, there's a couple of districts in the state. Ardmore is one of them. I believe Enid is another one, where they've done some pretty innovative things. And we have to go to the private sector, build an endowment, and find ways to raise the teacher pay, principal's pay, and incentivize these people to stay in these critical positions. I want to conclude with this. Again, I'm going to say that you have to have great teachers. There's absolutely no substitute for that. There's no substitute for great teachers, but there's also no such thing as great schools without great principals. So the same holds true for those principals. And then we also have to raise the pay of our support staff. These folks are holding critical positions. They're directly providing services to support those teachers and their principals in their schools, and of course, directly supporting our students. And they can go to Walmart and make more money. This is unacceptable.
Ms. Laura, you're also in charge of assessments. What will that mean? What changes are students and parents going to see? For example, might you go to some kind of a assessment system in which you're trying to measure how students do in terms of accomplishing certain skills as opposed to just taking one test that covers a lot of skills? What changes can we look for?
Well, like I mentioned earlier, one of the things that we just did was develop an assessment and data task force that's made up of teachers and principals and central office administrators and members of our research and evaluation team. And so we've asked them to come together to talk about what they're currently experiencing in our district, what they would like to see happen in the future, just so we can make sure our assessment system makes sense. So I don't want to come in and tell the district, here's what we need to do, without being able to get input and listen to real people on the ground who are working in our system every day, using data to figure out what's the right next steps for kids. So basically what we're doing is our assessment task force met for the first time last week. I believe there were over 30 people who were in attendance. It's a very hot topic. And we've got Dr. Cindy Koss, who's leading that work, and it's going to continue to meet with them. They're going to make a set of recommendations to us, and we're going to listen to the voices of teachers and principals on this.
Now, both of you have talked about increasing rigor in the classroom. We have a lot of struggling students. Are you just setting... Isn't this going to lead to a decline in their performance if you raise the bar without – what's that going to mean?
I think there's a couple different things. I think that we tend to oversimplify – I should say really overcomplicate the process. The first thing we've got to do is raise the expectations and then connect the kids to them. We've got to tell them that we love them, we care about them, we believe in them. You can't even imagine how important that is into this equation. And what we have instead is we've created this environment nationwide where teachers are on a hamster wheel trying to go to the just covering content to get kids ready to the test. And if we drop back, focus on the essential learnings, we can call them standards. Common Core was one of those places where we were identifying standards, although I think Common Core had too many standards. So what we have to do is we have to narrow the curriculum and go deeper in the learning and take the time to connect kids to that learning. And by doing that, telling them that we believe in them and then providing them the support to get there. One of the things that this district has done, and I'm so pleased to see that it's in place, is we've put an investment into AVID. AVID is a program designed to support the first-generation college-going student. So it's really designed also for students in poverty. And that is a great support structure to help kids, help our students acquire the skills that they need to be successful and then connect them to that higher level of rigor.
One question, and then I'll open it up to the audience. At Federal Way, you put in a new grading system. You also put in what you call academic acceleration, which is basically to move students up as they master certain skills. Are we going to be seeing the same thing or something similar here?
No and yes. So I'll go with the academic acceleration first. We're on October 29th, all sophomores and juniors are taking the PSAT for free during the school day. So we've taken away that barrier of transportation on a Saturday and cost. And so with that assessment, juniors can qualify for the National Merit Scholar Program by taking that test, but also the sophomores and juniors who are successful in the exams or parts of it, we can then automatically place them into advanced placement coursework that they may not have thought that they were capable of doing before. What we found in Federal Way was 80% of our kids of color qualified for advanced placement or IB, International Baccalaureate, and only 30% were being enrolled. Demographics here are a little bit more of a minority district. And so I don't see that is being as big of an issue here, but I can tell you that not enough of our kids are in those advanced rigor programs. And we were able to, in Federal Way, increase enrollment in our AP and IB classes by about 200%. And we went from a predominantly white and Asian enrollment into those advanced rigor classes into an enrollment that mirrored the enrollment of the students of the school district. So it was very successful. Changed the culture of expectations in that school district. The second piece, the standards-based grading that we implemented, we had gone through a process starting with science, physical education, and music of developing standards in all content areas, but we started in those, and we aligned the standards from starting with the exit outcomes that we want our students to have down through pre-K. And then we did that in the rest of the content areas. And then we built assessments to match those standards. What's kind of misleading is that Federal Way had been a standards-based district, K-8, for many years. Really, the implementation came in the high schools. And in building that system, a grade book that measured the students by the standards, we had some complications. And the thing that we did, I thought we did a really nice job of, is we met those challenges head on, transparently, and we fixed them. And there's still a standards-based system. They have no homework that counts in a grade. So, you know, because I firmly believe that homework for points of practice counting in the grade, that's malpractice. No extra credit counts in a grade, and it's not by how students look or if they're compliant. It's whether or not they know the content.
Is that what we're going to see here?
No, and here's why. It's way too difficult to go through that kind of structural change if we don't reculture the district first. And so the focus here has got to be students as partners. We've got to love our kids. We've got to know them by name, strength, need, hopes, and dreams, connect them to them. We've got to get great teachers. We've got to ensure that our teachers are great teachers and in front of those kids every day. And we have to make sure our principals are effective instructional leaders. What I found through that process is if we do the wrong reform, it becomes a distraction. The focus has to be on students. The true reform has to come through the hearts and the minds of the kids. If we take the time to listen to them, they have something to say.
Thanks. I'd like to open it up to questions. Evie, up here, has a microphone, and Warren Veith. I can't see him, but he's out there somewhere. So just raise your hand if you'd like to pose a question to either of our guests.
In lieu of what's going on with Dr. Staples and the former superintendent, what's going to happen to the teachers?
I couldn't understand the question.
What happened to Dr. Staples and also the former superintendent? What's going to happen to the teachers that lost their jobs short time?
I can't discuss that. That's a personnel issue. Thank you.
I'm not familiar with that issue, but question back there.
Rob, what are some of the principles and applications you apply daily as a superintendent that you did as a coach?
How does my coaching experience back in the day when I was coaching basketball?
Yes, sir.
I like that question better than the first question. To me, from a personal perspective and having come from a coaching background, I always like to tell folks when I'm in leadership discussions that probably prepared me for this role as principal more than anything that I've ever done. Because it's really about, you know, right now I'm coaching a team of 89 schools, 46,000 students, 5,000 staff. And our job is to create a vision of what we can become better than what we are now, and aligning systems, providing that support, and ensuring their success. And it's the same thing that we did when we went to the gym every day. But I really want to say this, and this may make some sense to folks as they've heard me talk and will continue to hear me talk. I never emphasize winning with my teams. I always felt that winning was a byproduct of doing things right every day, and our job was to come in the gym or into the classroom and work as hard as we could every day, and our job was to get better every day. And those test results, those metrics, whatever it is that we decide that we're going to measure ourselves by, those will take care of ourselves. Take care of themselves if we come in and do the right things every day.
Question back there.
Yeah. Hi, I'm sorry, Superintendent. I'm not sure on all the exact rules, but I believe that Oklahoma City is still a open transfer, what they call an open transfer school, that you can very easily transfer between elementary schools, middle schools, high schools, wherever you want to, wherever a parent wants to go.
And you can also take your students out of district if you choose, and we won't stop you.
Right. I don't know where you've been before that either had that or had opposite policy of that, but can you talk about the pros and cons of that and any difficulties that might suffice? Because just from my limited experience, it seems that that makes a very transient school population, and I remember statistics upwards of 60-70% of a school student base was new within any given year, and that just seems like it's really difficult.
Well, pros and cons. I'll start with the pros. I think it's really important that our principals and the communities of the schools that they serve have the autonomy to serve their students because they know their students best, to meet their students' needs, how they see fit. And so within that, they may create schools or school environment that attracts families to their schools. So I think that having a menu of options. We have charter schools, we have enterprise schools, we have traditional schools. And I think that having that portfolio, if you will, and having those options, I think that's really positive because I think you want to give parents choice. The irony is, though, is not that many people truly take advantage of that school choice. And what you find, here's the con, what you find in an urban environment is that really only favors the families who have the mobility. They have the ability to transfer, I should say, or transport their student. So it becomes an issue of equity in a lot of cases. So one of the things that we have to do here, in my opinion, and this goes from lessons learned from the international education community, we are the only country in the world that funds our schools by zip code. In other words, the wealthy communities get wealthier in their education, and they have a higher per pupil funding. That's how we fund our schools in America. Whereas if you go overseas, you'll see just the opposite. And what we have to do here is we have to start targeting resources to our kids and to our communities and to our schools that are struggling the most. Because at the end of the day, my job is to make sure that every one of these schools is a school that somebody wants to be in by choice, not because they can't get anywhere else.
I have a quick question for Ms. Laura. The standards are a mess. We don't have any standards. Common Core has become politicized. How can you put in a solid, long-lasting curriculum when you don't even know what your standards are going to be, at least for a few years?
Yeah, that's a great question. All this happened on my second week on the job. So what we've been trying to do at this point is just help teachers make sense of where we are in the state of Oklahoma. So, you know, we know that we've gone back to the past standards. So we are doing pacing guides that are aligned to the standards that are in past. But one of the things that we want to do is have an eye towards the future, knowing that we're going to go to something more rigorous. So what our department is doing is helping to figure out where in the past standards can we supplement and make things more rigorous so that our kids aren't caught off guard in 2 years when the state decides on a set of new standards to go to that are more rigorous. What we know is that as a district and as a country, we are not doing enough to prepare our kids for success in the world beyond high school. And so what we have to do is make sure that we're upping the game for all kids. We're trying to figure out how to do that while still meeting the needs of our state, but it is a complicated and challenging time. But while the state figures out their standard situation, we know we owe it to the kids who are in our system now to do great by them, and that's what we're really trying to do.
Question back there from Warren.
Yes, I wanted to know if your door and your ears will be open for questions that may come up after today.
All right, can you speak up, please?
Sure. I said I wanted to know if your door and your ears will be open for questions that come up after today.
From my perspective, for just a couple more months, because then these decisions are mine, I got to live in them. No. That was a joke. One of the things that's starting in November, and I really want to emphasize this, is what we're going to call the great conversation moving forward as one. We have to have and continue to have our ears to the ground. We've got to know what's going on out there. You heard Aurora talk about what they're doing with the assessments. That's just one area where we're pulling together committees to address issues and concerns out there, assessment being one of them. One of the questions I get asked is what we're going to do to solve the overcrowding on the south end. School district's not going to solve that problem. That's a community problem. And the only way we're going to do that is that we come to the table together and have conversations about what's our current status, what's going on, what's our enrollment trends for the future, and how can we do this together. So to answer your question directly, will our door and our ears be open after today? Absolutely and emphatically, yes, that's our responsibility.
David? Well,
yes, right there.
Hi. We're with Stanford Children. I want to ask you a question about principal quality in Oklahoma City Public Schools. Superintendent New, heard you talk a lot about focusing resources. And so if we were to focus resources on principal quality, how would that actually increase student outcomes and student achievement in this urban district? And do you think that that's a worthwhile endeavor? And what will you do to address that in the coming months?
There's, Amber, there's research that, and I can't remember the exact percent now, that shows direct correlation between principal effectiveness and student achievement. And from my own experience of having been a principal and now starting year 26 in this business, the older I get, the more I do this, the more I realize the key person besides the teacher, is great principals. And so I've been asked about our principal quality and effectiveness. I don't know yet, and I won't know for a year. And the reason why is because our principals are having to do too many things the central office needs to be doing for them. It's nobody's fault. It's just, in my opinion, we've got to take some things off their plate, and then Aurora and her team are going to begin that process. I've already begun the process of developing their skills to become true and effective instructional leaders. And when that happens, I think we're going to see amazing results in our schools. And I say that because we did some pilot work up in the Seattle area that was very effective, and that work is being scaled in that region because of the success in Federal Way.
And one thing that I will just say about that is, you know, we've already started to do some work, and the role of a principal has really shifted over time from being more of a building manager to now having to be a strong instructional leader and a person who can walk into classrooms and knows how to coach teachers to get to the next step. And so what we're doing this year as we're kind of assessing the quality is we're putting supports in place. We're teaching principals how to be strong instructional leaders. And principals are in different places with how strong they are with instruction, but our job is to help make sure that they have the skills that they need to be able to help move student achievement. So we're in that process. I've been leading professional development. I'm working with the supervisors of the principals to coach them on how to coach principals for instructional improvement. There's a lot of work that we're doing, but this is a big area that a lot of districts have started to focus on, and kind of an emerging area of research where they're seeing there are certain best practices that districts can do, and that's what we're about to start doing here for Oklahoma City.
I understand in Dallas, where you were before, that there's a lot of changes have taken place there, and among those was a lot of turnover in principals. Well, the word to me was that a lot of principals were moved out and replaced to have more effectiveness in the schools. You see any of that happening?
Our number one job is to help grow people and to figure out where they start and to give them the knowledge and skills that they need to be able to do a great job. And so we're coming in just trying to figure out where people are and how we can help move them in a really supportive way. So we're just starting that work, but I believe that everyone wants to do a great job for our kids. And so we're approaching it from that perspective, and our job is to help them get there.
And let's not kid ourselves. We already have high turnover because of the hamster wheel that these guys are on, these principals are on. The job of principal is so difficult. And so we've got to change the conditions in which they're working, because right now we have high turnover, and we've got to – the key to effective schools is the principal, and then we've got to have longevity in those positions.
There's also a – what's the average superintendent tenure, 3, 4, 5 years, or –
In Oklahoma City, it's been about 1.3 years. There's a question in the back.
Yes.
Mr. New, what is your plan on engaging parents in that conversation? I mean, what can we expect from you? And then what is your, as a parent, what is going to be our channel for communicating to you any concerns that we have?
I'll take that first part of the question as the process that we're about to embark on. We've got a facilitator coming in who will set up a series of community forums and input opportunities, and there'll be facilitated conversations so that voices will be heard at each table, and then the information assembled into what will emerge into themes. The question earlier about is the door open and will your ears be open after tomorrow? One of the things that I've got to ask folks to do is, and my poor secretary gets just inundated with phone calls and emails every day, and people tend to come to me first with their concerns. And we can't run an organization that way. I can't be the first line of response. I have to be the last line of response, because really what needs to happen is those problems are best solved closest to where they occur. And one of the things that we have to understand is that let's not confuse listening with agreement. We're listening. We will continue to listen. But it doesn't mean that everybody's going to get their way. 46,000 students. How many parents, how many grandparents, how many aunts and uncles, how many business community? There's about 500,000 moving parts in this community. And so the key is, though, is that we come to the table in a coherent way where we all feel valued to have the opportunity to have our voices heard. That's the best that we can do. And from that, come away with those agreements.
Question back there.
Yes, I have a trifold question, I guess. We've talked a little bit about curriculum. We've talked a little bit about assessment. But one of my concerns as a community volunteer is that oftentimes as we walk down these halls of the schools, the classroom management is not what it really needs to be. The sit-down, shut-up activity is not the way we teach in the 21st century. And if, based on what I have heard in terms of union hours and that sort of thing, professional development has been left behind. How do you propose to tie curriculum, assessment, professional development, and classroom management? Because if we don't have the classroom management, we will not have improvement in scores.
Absolutely. I've seen some of the same things that you're talking about, and we have schools that have different strategies for how they're going to work on them. One of the things that I will say is I've been in a couple schools lately where we've seen a demonstrated need for some training school-wide on classroom management, and what I've done is I've gone back to my team and said, you know what, we have got to give these schools some support. You know, if they don't have the resources to be able to bring it in, we as a district need to do our job to help the school get what they need to be able to serve kids. So we just scheduled a big classroom management training for a couple schools to be able to participate in, and we've opened it up to other teachers as well. We've also really tried to step up what we're offering in terms of professional development and improve our ways of communicating that to the teachers, because I believe that we've been trying to do that for a while, offer them, but our communication hasn't been great with teachers to let them know all the things that they have available. A few months ago, we just did a big Saturday workshop day where we had a huge wait list to get in. Teachers gave up their Saturdays voluntarily to come learn, to be part of workshops, to grow themselves professionally. And when I went out and saw that and saw what teachers were doing, I thought, wow, we need to do more of this in our district. Clearly, people are hungry for really good professional development, and we need to help meet those needs. So that's what I've charged my curriculum department with doing, and we're getting there, but there's a lot more work that we need to do in the coming year.
And I just want to add what I've charged Aurora with and what we talk about all the time is that this is just not talking points. We've got to know our students by name, strength, need, hopes, and dreams. And we have to target our professional development to also incorporate individual student needs. We cannot develop our teachers by the average, to the average, or one size fits all, just like we can't teach to kids in one size fits all. We have to design a system to the edges, meeting individual student needs, and then giving the teachers the tools to meet those individual student needs. And that is going to take time and a lot of effort and resources. But that's the commitment that you have from us.
We have a question up front here.
It's kind of funny because that is exactly the question that I was going to ask you, Mr. New. As far as the new culture that you are saying that you're wanting to be in the schools, I think that's great, being able to know the students better. And you're saying it's going to take time. Do you all have any kind of timeline in mind as far as implementation? How are you going to hold teachers and staff accountable to actually caring about students? Because that is kind of personal. But being that you have done this before in your previous school, can you give us any kind of idea of a timeline? Also, secondly, with that, do you have any kind of program, or have you considered also the teachers mirroring the students that are in the classroom as far as minorities?
So the timeline for implementation is 1.3 years, the same as superintendent life expectancy in Oklahoma City. It's underway now, and we can see immediate successes this year in targeted schools. And we're working right now on getting some grants to bring in some support to do that. And I say that because I saw it firsthand last year in Federway. We piloted six schools to Race to the Top. We were Race to the Top District Award winner through the federal government. And we were part of a consortium of seven school districts and that won the award. The problem is that when you win a federal grant, you invite the feds in. It's like inviting Dracula, and Dracula has all of his powers. But what we're able to do with the funds is bring in a consultant from the New Zealand Ministry of Education. She put into place change lead teams in those six schools. And part of that, you'll now start to connect some dots of things that I hope that you're hearing me say. Principal was involved in that change team, the assistant principal or leadership, counseling, teachers. students and parents and community members were part of those change teams. We had three very targeted goals, and we're in the process of finding out what those target areas are going to be here. And those were our areas where we were struggling the most. They were by subject, they were by race and ethnicity when it applied. And we targeted those students. And the idea and the philosophy is that if we can get those who are struggling the most to rise, all ships rise with the rising tide. Because what you see is who are the students that are causing the problems? It's those kids who are disengaged who don't want to be there. My favorite policy of all time is that we suspend kids for skipping school. So let's engage these kids who are disengaged first. And it doesn't mean that we take away from the others, but we've got to bring in resources from the outside. This community has those resources so that we can target those kids and we can start seeing some immediate impacts. And then scaling it up, it's going to be a 3 to 5 year process to go district-wide. But we've got to start now, and we've got to get private dollars to begin that process. And what was the second part of your question?
Do you have a plan for perhaps the making sure that the teacher core mirror the students?
And this is one of those that's got to be a long-term plan. If you look at the country as a whole, and we're no different, our teaching population tends to be white females, predominantly. And that's not a criticism. It is what it is. But in the time that these teachers came into the profession, there has been significant demographic shifts all over the country. Obviously, we've experienced that here, and we were experienced that in both the districts that I was in previously. And so what we're doing here is, A, we've got to recruit accordingly. We just brought in 15 or 16 Spanish teachers from Spain, Spanish-speaking teachers from Spain. We're now into the process of looking at bringing in teachers from Puerto Rico. And the reason why is because these countries are producing excellent candidates who don't have jobs. And they're speaking that second language that, A, they look like our students, B, they can connect to our students through the language. But we also can do some things internally. And you may have heard that we've announced a partnership with Oklahoma City Community College and University of Central Oklahoma, where they'll take our qualified graduates, and I mean kids who have a 22 ACT, who are involved in some sort of team, sport, civic leadership activity, some extracurricular, so they have those extra skills to bring to the classroom, and if they graduate from us qualified, go to OCCC and or UCO, graduate with a teaching degree, they're guaranteed a job here, 3 years of service with us, we'll wipe their college debt-free. It's a longitudinal approach to attract exactly who you're talking about. Not only kids who look like them, but who are them, who are from where they're from, who understand who they are, and they have the skills to give back to their community.
I have a question about parental involvement. And this comes partly from our research from one of our reporters, our education reporter, Nate Robeson, who's looking into this question. What do you expect parents to do in terms of being engaged that really helps their child? You made a speech once, and you referred to it as authentically. But, you know, there was a Harvard study out probably last year that found that what everyone believes is not true, that going to parent-teacher conferences and doing homework with your child actually can hurt their academic progress. So what do you want parents out there to do in terms with their...
I have to laugh at that, David, because as my kids started progressing through the grade levels in math, I was that parent that was hurting them when they were doing their homework in math, starting about sixth grade because of how much more rigorous it is than when I was going to school. But when I say authentic engagement, it truly means this. And when you look at the makeup of our community, there's a disengagement, but not by choice necessarily, but perhaps by I think there's a feeling of a lack of connectedness in some sections. But in the South, especially in the Hispanic culture, they'll tell you that parental engagement is not part of the Hispanic culture. And so what we've got to do is a couple different things. First of all, I'm asking parents to come in and simply tell us who their kids are by name, strength, need, hopes, and dreams. They do know who their kids are. And if they can come in and at least work with us on that level, that's that authentic engagement that I'm talking about. Parent-teacher conferences and helping out at bake sales or those types of things, those that we've always done. Those things are great. We need to continue to do them. But let's really bring parents to the table as partners and ask them, how can we meet your child's needs? And we don't tend to ask that.
But do parents always know what their child's needs are for academic success? I mean, it sounds good to say, We want to know all their names. We want to know their strengths. But really, does that work?
What we have to do is not put that onus on the parents, but what the parents can do is help us understand who they are as a learner, who they are as a young person, as an individual, and help us understand what it is in their life. What is it that excites them? And then how can we then tailor the learning to fit those areas of interest? That will be a seismic shift in student engagement when we get better at that. When you see teachers out in the hallways greeting kids in a classroom at the beginning of the day, the beginning of the class period, and you see an exchange, and you see that teacher asking them how their weekend was, how was that competition that you performed, how was your basketball game, how was that art festival, and they know those kids by who they are. The engagement factor in those classes is significantly higher. Parents can help us make that connection.
Question here.
My question is regarding the continuous learning calendar, what your thoughts are regarding that and its effect, if any, on literacy, numeracy rates, graduation rates, since it was implemented here.
When I first got here, my first official day was July 1, and we had to open school August 4. And I broke it out into a sweat and started hyperventilating. And then I needed a brown paper bag to get my breathing back. How are we going to open these schools on time? I'm concerned about the continuous calendar because I think it puts a tremendous amount of pressure. I know it puts a tremendous amount of pressure on our central office staff. I saw it in July. I know it puts a tremendous amount of pressure on our principals. But I also know what I don't know, and that's part of the learning process. I've got to go through a calendar year. Intercession's coming. I want to see the effectiveness of that, and I want to see how people can go and sharpen their saw. Can they come back refreshed from that time if they can get away? Because I think that's important. We can't underestimate the amount of pressure that our teachers and our principals and our staff are under. And so, but at the same time, we're analyzing student achievement results. And it, quite frankly, as we head into year four, it's flat. So with that comes a responsibility to understand why is it that we went to this continuous calendar. I know why, and I think it's really courageous and innovative that Oklahoma City did that. I do. But is it yielding the results that we intended? Not yet. So therefore, let's analyze what it is that we think we have to do to be successful, and then if that's the case, implement those factors, those initiatives. What I think I'm hearing so far is that there's different groups out there, including parents, who like the continuous calendar. So I'm not going to come in and make a recommendation to the board based on what I think and what I feel. What I'm going to do is continue to monitor this, work with the WAR, work with our principals. I've got a student advisory group that I'm going to start meeting with. I think it's next week or the week after. I want to ask them. Students have a voice. We've got to listen to them. So more to come on the continuous calendar. But I do want to leave you with this thought, that 15% of our utilities are spent in August because of the heat. There's something really interesting. We all thought that the traditional calendar was based on an agrarian society. If that were the case, we'd have fall and spring off for planting and harvest. It was because it was too hot in the summer to put kids in school. And so we're going to continue to look at that continuous calendar, and I will make a recommendation to the board based on best information, data, and recommendations from all stakeholders.
Ms. Laura, do you want to add something?
The only thing I would add is we've heard some specific challenges, things that had the potential to make us be able to really see some student achievement gains that just haven't played out exactly right. For example, during intersessions, we have an ability to be able to bring students back to give them some remediation if they need some extra assistance. But the challenge there lies with us needing to be able to bring the right kids back. And so it doesn't do us any good if the kids that we really need to see aren't the ones who come to summer intercession or summer school. So, you know, we haven't necessarily seen the big increases, but we know some of the challenges, and what we're trying to do right now is think through how do we problem solve that? How do we make sure we've got the right kids coming so we really can take advantage of what the calendar is giving us? And so this year we're really just assessing, we're taking feedback, we're trying to problem solve issues, and then we'll really do our analysis to see whether it's working.
One more question, and that will do it. Abby?
Hi. As a parent, first I'd love to say my son would love to have homework not count, because then he would probably be a straight-A student. But my question is about the successful school sites that we have. What are the district's plans for expanding those and supporting those successful sites that we have?
I'll start. We're in the process of having meetings right now with our charter leadership And we've had some conversation with enterprise leadership, but also some of the other schools. What we have to do is really have a symposium of best practices. And what is it that's working in these schools? And what is it that we can scale up? And so that's our responsibility going forward. What I think I'm finding here, and what I'm being told, is that over time there has been some a little tension between the various types of schools in the district. What we have to do is make ourselves a portfolio district, and here's what we offer when you come to Oklahoma City. And what we have to do is target the areas that are struggling the most with those best practices that we can scale up so that all of our schools are high-performing.
Yeah, and I will say, you know, we are all about learning best practices and not reinventing the wheel when we know there are practices out there that work for kids. And we want to see what those are and figure out how do we do the same thing. So just to give an example, earlier this year, and I won't name the charter school, but there's a high-performing charter school that I took a team out to. I took a principal. I took central office leaders. I said, let us see what instruction looks like in your classroom. Talk to us about how you run your leadership team meetings. Let's talk about what kind of professional development you do. We want to be able to do similar types of activities. And the charter school that I went to was very open to wanting to share. I was actually back there today to look at how do we partner better as a district. And it's not just about charter schools. It's also about high-performing schools in our own district. We've got lots and lots of schools out there where the teachers and the principals are doing amazing, amazing work. And we really need to take a look at what they're doing and figure out, yeah, how do we share those? How do we break down the silos so that principals are learning from each other, so that teachers are learning from each other? And how do we make sure that this is a place where everyone feels safe to learn and to ask questions and to admit they don't have all the answers? Because that's how we're going to grow as a system. So we're really excited. That's the work we're starting. And I think we're going to do great things as a result of that.
Right, I mentioned a promise was made before I made my promise, so I'll break my promise to honor this promise for one more question.
Before that question, I want to add, I have to add this. What we also have to do, though, is we have to ensure that these practices are equitable and accessible to all of our kids, because the one thing that all of our kids have in common, they're our kids. I don't care how we serve them, but we have to make sure that they're all successful.
Mr. New, when you first came to Oklahoma City, you mentioned something about focus group, getting all over the community, teachers, parents, business people. What will be the ultimate result of the formation of those focus groups, and how will it be used to improve our school system and make it the best in the nation?
Ms. Parks, I want to tell you it's nice to see you tonight, and you look lovely in that outfit. What's going to come out and is already in the process of my 100 days is that step one is themes that have emerged. Some of them emerge right away. Others I'm uncovering as we continue to move on. I'm at about day 65 or thereabouts right now. 100th day is November 19th. So I'll be producing a report to the board and a presentation to the board on what those 100 days have taught me and what I see in the district. But the next piece and the more important piece is that great conversation is coming that's going to be facilitated by this gentleman out of Oakland, California, who I've seen the results of his work, and I think you're going to all love the process that he's going to facilitate, because that's where those focus groups are going to come in. And what's going to come out of that is we are going to decide what we believe is most important for our students and what we're going to hold this school system and this superintendent for 1.3 years accountable to.
It's a great question to end the session with.
Thank you.
They'll be around for a few minutes, but please thank our guests for coming.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a recent Oklahoma Watch Out event hosted by the online news organization that featured a conversation with Oklahoma City Public Schools Superintendent Rob New and Associate Superintendent Aurora Laura. We had to edit out a few questions from the audience portion to run in the time allotted, but you can find the entire unedited presentation as well as full video and highlights at kgou.org. Our thanks to KGOU Chief Engineer Patrick Roberts for recording this panel and Program Director Jim Johnson for preparing this audio for air. for KGOU and Oklahoma Voices, I'm Brian Hardzinski.